to me, it's absolutely mind-boggling that I spent 3 hours to watch what this study actually said. If I were just to come across this study in my own whatever and look at it, I would maybe take 5 minutes to talk about it on a podcast. I mean, first of all, we're talking about an 8-week study, not very long, and we're talking about 44 total people, not very big. We're going to get to the results in a minute, which aren't that amazing. So the idea of 4 hours of high press media content is just crazy.
Hello and welcome to the Consistency Project podcast. My name is Patrick Cummings. As always, I'm here with EC Sinkowski. Every week on the show, we aim to simplify the science of nutrition, health, and fitness, cutting through the noise to focus on the principles and practices that will help you perform better, feel better, and live better. Thanks so much for tuning into the show this week. Hi, how are you, EC?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic. We are doing something, I don't know if this is really new, but we're doing it new in the sense of like, we're paying attention to what people are paying attention to, and we want to talk about it.
We're so trying to be trendy, Netflix Patrick.
We're trying to be on trend here. Instead of 7 months after something comes out, we're going to talk about it now. We're going to talk about the recently released Netflix docuseries called You Are What You Eat, a twin experiment. So we're going to get into what it is and your thoughts on it. Before we get into that conversation, want to make sure folks know and are on EC's email newsletter list. You can get it at optimizemenutrition.com/email. Bonus content every week. Get some reminders of when we release new episodes. And often EC is able to answer some listener questions there that we're not able to get to here on the podcast itself. So again, optimizemenutrition.com/email. The link is in the show notes as well if you want to get there quickly and easily. All right, so I thought we would start this conversation on this documentary with a listener question. As it happens, I got one this morning about this series. And so I responded. Her name is Yelena. I was like, very good timing. So here's what she said. So I thought this would be a great place to start. She said, I just finished watching the Netflix series called You Are What You Eat. And as a mostly vegan person, of course, I thought it made all the sense in the world. However, I couldn't stop thinking about EC how EC would trash the series and or point out the flaws or potential holes in it. Even though I enjoy the content, I still feel it could be seen or interpreted as vegan propaganda. Still, if it helps people eat more fruits and vegetables, we all win in the end. If you guys could do a review of this study, I'm assuming there's an actual published study, that would be great. So again, we can speak to any of that specifically, but I thought that was a nice entry point. And maybe the first question, she alludes to it at the end. This docuseries is based on a study coming out of Stanford. So maybe we can just start there and give us a sense of what that was. Maybe.
Well, Yelena didn't just have good timing. She summarized it already. He summarized the ups and the downs.
Okay, we're done. See you later, guys.
That was great. That was awesome. Yeah. So it is this new Netflix, I guess docuseries is the best way to say it. It's 4 episodes, and it's about this study that I think was officially published at the end of last year. And they have 22 pairs of twins. Identical twins, and they give one twin a vegan diet, and then they also give the other twin an omnivore diet, and then they look at various biomarkers. And they determine the effects of these diets after about 8 weeks. So something that's really cool about this study is that they're using twins. And why that's so awesome is because their genetics are the same. So often we talk about how much variation there is in genetics. And here we have people that are genetically identical. So it takes out some of those variables that are really, really impossible to control for when we look across a larger population. And so this, by using kind of genetically identical people, we then are able to say, oh, okay, then the diet is what caused these differences, right? Because there aren't other differences going on, or too many other differences going on, I should say. So that's really cool. The other thing that was really cool about the study is they attempted to make it a healthy omnivore diet. So oftentimes when we talk about people who eat meat, we're also like, okay, well, what does their whole diet look like? Is it just the burger and fries type of diet? Where in this case, when they were giving the omnivores meat, they wanted to do it in the context of a mostly whole unprocessed food diet. So that was really great too, that we weren't trying to have this kind of, comparison to like a standard American diet.
So let's bridge then from the study into the documentary, which was the study and the documentary series, do you know if they're related, or was it just, and it should be said, the filmmakers for this, the producers also produced Game Changers, which is a documentary we've talked about before, very similar in terms of perspective and outlook. were the documentary filmmakers involved in the study, or are these totally separate? And they were like, hey, that's an interesting study. Let's turn that into a docuseries. Maybe we don't even know.
Yeah, I don't, they don't ever present the creators or the producers, but they do present the people who are authors of the paper. Mm-hmm. And that's really interesting too, because I think we're going to get into how what the paper concludes is very different than what's presented. And so I would just sort of love to know, you know, if I was the lead author on this paper and I saw the docuseries back, I would sort of think that's not exactly what I said, or that's not exactly mm-hmm. what we found. And so I'm just sort of very curious. Maybe they have the opinion sort of like what Yelena said, and it's like, well, at the end of the day, people might eat more fruits and vegetables, so maybe it's a net win. Yeah. But from a science point of view, I definitely think the producers took their own slant with it, and I would not be happy with the end product as a result. So don't really know really how much they were involved.
Got it. Okay. So let's give me overall sense of the series itself. I mean, we've alluded to it a little bit already here, but like, let's formalize it. Thoughts on, you know, now that you've watched all four episodes, what do you think?
Well, I think you could skip it. I don't think it's as bad as Game Changers. Although, I don't know, maybe I'm just getting used to these because now I'm trying to keep up with the Netflix stuff. So maybe I'm just kind of getting used to it. I'm like, all right, well, let's see what this is. But to me, it's absolutely mind-boggling that I spent 3 hours of time to watch what this study actually said. If I were just to come across this study in my own whatever and look at it, I would maybe take 5 minutes to talk about it on a podcast. Mm-hmm. Maybe. I don't mm-hmm. even know. I might even just skip the whole darn thing. I mean, first of all, we're talking about an 8-week study, not very long. And we're talking about 44 total people, not very big. We're going to get to the results in a minute, which aren't that amazing. So the idea of 4 hours of high press media content is just crazy. But that's kind of the initial thing. The next thing is, I think what's very similar to Game Changers is they really try to cram a lot of complicated topics into this idea with just this one single solution of, okay, if all of us were vegan, everything in the world would be okay. You know, the mm-hmm. premise of the whole thing, the initial premise is the vegan diet is healthier. But then all of a sudden we're kind of wrapped into, okay, well, how does big agriculture, how do they raise meat and what are the impacts on carbon emissions? And then we also have the ethics of animal practices. And then they also bring in this romantic idea of, okay, everybody should know their farm to table idea. And here's the thing is I'm not against farm to table. I'm also not against like figuring out carbon emissions and climate change. I'm not against figuring out better animal rights or however the best system is. But figuring out global emissions is not the same thing as figuring out what's going on in this person's diet, right? Mm-hmm. Figuring out animal rights practices are not the same thing as what's going on with somebody's nutrition quality of their diet. And so I think they kind of pull all of this stuff together because I think it's an attempt to strengthen their argument. It's like, hey, this diet is healthier. Oh, and by the way, we're going to save the environment. Oh, by the way, we're also going to treat animals better. And so it's kind of like this win-win-win idea. But in my opinion, it's just not so simple, you know, that arguing again for animal rights is not the same thing as figuring out what the best contribution or, you know, nutrient composition of a diet is. And I would really love a great documentary, a really great documentary about animal rights and climate change, but this isn't it. I think sometimes, you know, we look at these things from these really idyllic point of view here. When they leave out factors about big agriculture, like why is the system the way it is? Is it price? What do we have to think about from an economical point of view that really is driving this the way that it is? And how is that going to impact people's ability to purchase food or something like that? There's tons of other things. And I know I've been going for a little bit here, but the climate change thing really, really drives me crazy too, in the sense of we're going to blame all of climate change on meat eaters. It gets really tiring to me. I'm like, why don't we look at the bigger contributors to emissions, travel in general, heat, electricity? I just think that because the vegan point of view in this type of media has these ethical and environmental beliefs associated with their way of eating, which again, I'm fine with, but that's why they sort of get wrapped all together into this singular, we found the solution and everything will be okay. But to me, I don't think they really address the issues individually adequately, right? It's like, okay, well, let's really talk about nutrient composition. What does that look like? Okay, and that's separate from environmental stuff that we really have to take a deep dive on. And that's separate from animal rights that we'd really have to take a deep dive on. And so, again, I just think it's presented in this way that everything would be right in the world if we were all vegan. And I'm just not really convinced of that. Like, we'd have no carbon emissions if we were all vegan. It's like, well.
To me, the overwhelming feeling I got from watching as much as I did, and I watched almost three episodes of the four, was that the goal was to make me feel really guilty for consuming protein, meat maybe specifically. And that, in fact, was the argument it was trying to make. Not the health argument. The health argument was like this nice hook in, because I think that that's what people respond to. They feel personally, selfishly attracted to the idea of, I need to be healthier. I want to be healthier. I know I should be healthier. And then when you get in the door of, hey, we're here to talk about health, now I'm going to hit you with all of it. And I'm going to make you feel really bad about the cheeseburger you ate last week.
That's interesting. It's a really interesting to hear from not, you know, my point of view, because of course when I'm watching this thing, I'm like, okay, what are they going to say about this biomarker? Yeah. You know, so I'm totally dialed in on the nutrition side, but from an overall kind of standing back and be like, what's the general sentiment here? It's also interesting. It's like maybe a way to motivate people to make habit changes really hard. You know, maybe if you can pull at somebody's kind of guilt, that's actually a way to drive motivation. I don't know that it's the best way to drive motivation, but it's an interesting approach. I saw a study that was looking at diet adherence, and I'm going to get all the details wrong, but basically the people that were doing quick weight loss were not adherent, and people that were doing vegan were very, very adherent. And the conclusion was, oh, because they have a reason above and beyond this sort of aesthetic thing, right? They're doing it because of ethical beliefs or you know, a moral responsibility. Yeah. So it does drive adherence. Whether or not we need to be adherent is another question.
Let's talk about the science a little bit. You've alluded to, and I like the point you made that I wonder if the science, like the folks behind the Stanford study are like, wait, what? So let's dive into a little bit of that. Where do you see some contradiction or just some blurring of the lines between the science and let's just call it the entertainment part of the, which this docuseries, it's entertainment. Let's make sure we point that out.
Definitely. I know documentary, that word has been hijacked just like detox, as we've talked about before. Yep. That one's been hijacked for sure.
Yeah. And again, I think we've talked about it before. Like there's a difference between documentary and journalism. This is not journalism. Mm-hmm. This is a documentary, which is important to, you know, we've talked about it with books before too. It's just like, just because somebody wrote the book doesn't mean it's been fact checked and all these things that we expect out of something in a journalistic institution. This is different. This is entertainment. It's edutainment, right? It's for profit. It's like all of these things matter when we look at these things.
Yeah. So, you know, there's some weaknesses of the study, which I don't even know how much I want to go into that because I just don't think even looking at the results, it matters. But they did look at a slew of different biomarkers, and they talk about this. And as you saw in the series, that they keep going back to, oh my gosh, we're going to look at your poop. We're going to look at your blood. We're going to look at your urine. We're going to look at all these biomarkers. So they did end up supposedly collecting tens and tens of biomarkers. But I just want to kind of highlight, I think, where there was this big difference between what the messaging in the series is trying to tell you versus what the science actually says. And I mean, both in terms of their published research, as well as just known kind of clinical relevance. And so I want to talk about TMAO body composition, which is very of interest to our audience typically. Mm-hmm. And then the third one is LDL cholesterol. So just to start with the TMAO one, this is an example, in my opinion, of them making up a problem that's not really a problem. So, okay, TMAO, it's trimethylamine N-oxide. That's the name of the compound. Mm-hmm. And it's produced by the bacteria in your gut, your GI system, when your body digests red meat. And there are some studies that link high blood levels of TMAO to a higher risk of cardiovascular disease and death. And so they measured TMAO in this twin experiment. At the end of the study, the omnivores had a higher average of TMAO than the vegans. And so that's what's presented to you in the series. And of course, it sounds a little scary and it sounds like, oh, shoot, well, maybe I should be vegan. Okay, now let's get into the whole story. So TMAO is produced from a variety of foods, and including things like seafood, fish, result in twice as high levels of TMAO than beef. And that's from the Kruger paper in the show notes. And fish is one of those foods, in my opinion. Now we're going to get into a little bit of what happened in the documentary, but fish generally, in my opinion, is one of those foods that's sort of accepted as healthy. It is a healthy food and it's generally considered to be a healthy food. That's what we find in the literature as well, that when people eat fish, they actually lower their risk of cardiovascular disease. So here we have a food that results in twice as much TMAO as beef, yet it's associated with a lower risk of cardiovascular disease. So it starts to make you think, well, I don't know if I need to worry about this TMAO thing. Now, I know in the study they go after farmed fish. I'm just going to say that that's a little bit irrelevant. Yes, farmed fish is higher in fat than wild caught fish. And maybe, again, there's some environmental and ethical considerations that we should look at for sure. But the idea that our whole health epidemic is around because we are dealing with people eating too much farm fish is just laughable. It's like the idea that we're eating too much fruit. It's just like, okay, guys, we're talking about 6 grams of fat here and difference of fillets. This is not the issue for most people in their diet. So anyway, just aside, TMAO, you're going to have higher levels from eating fish, and fish we know lowers cardiovascular disease risk. So that kind of puts a ding in their argument. The other thing here though, which is really important and they don't bring up in the series, is yes, there was a higher average in the omnivores versus the vegans, but if you actually go into the paper, those averages were not statistically significant in terms of their difference between each other, right? So remember when I talk about these averages, that's an average of a range of values, just like the average height for a woman is 5'4". There's a lot of different heights that women are, right? So when we look at the average for the omnivores and we look at the average for the vegans, and we look at their ranges, they pretty much overlap such that they're not statistically significant different. You can't tell the difference between the two mathematically. And yet in the docuseries, they're like, oh my gosh, but their TMAO is so much better on the vegan diet. And you go to the paper, it's like, but not statistically significant. Oops. And the authors in this actual paper, they even admit that we don't know if TMAO is a marker of concern. Quote, whether TMAO is a bystander or mediator of disease remains unknown, end quote. Meaning maybe the high TMAO is just an artifact of somebody having disease. Maybe it's not actually driving the disease. And there's other limitations of TMAO and why it's not yet the accepted marker of heart disease, blah, blah, blah. But here we have a case of like just totally making up a problem, creating fear mongering about it when A, it's not statistically different between the two diets, and B, it might not actually be an issue.
Got it.
The second one that I wanted to touch on was body composition. That's still our most popular episode.
Sure. Every time.
Every time. So yeah, our audience is definitely always interested in gaining lean mass and losing body fat. And so guess what? They looked at this. Now, the paper that I found that was published according to this study, they don't actually have the body composition results in this paper. They might publish another one, as these studies do. They try to get a lot of publications out of it, but they didn't have it. So what I'm going to talk about is what was reported in the docuseries. And in the docuseries, they really fixate on four sets of twins. So you don't really see the results of everybody. But anyway, when we look at the body composition, we find that the vegans didn't fare very well. There was one woman especially, I think she was in her 40s, she lost several pounds of lean mass on the vegan diet. Not good. Another one lost like minimal or just maintained. And I think another one also lost some lean mass. Now there was one twin set. It was a very, very active young guys. And the vegan put on 2 pounds of lean mass. Oh, guess what? The omnivore put on 7 pounds of lean mass. So in the docuseries, they sort of just gloss over this rather significant finding that the vegan individuals did not seem to respond as favorably in terms of that lean mass component. And I was just thinking to myself, oh my God, if this was reversed and the meat eaters had a poor lean mass outcome, we would be hearing about that over and over and over again, right? And so this is a case where the results weren't that favorable and they're like, oh, not a big deal. They probably just didn't like to resistance train as much. Moving on. And again, when you go to the actual paper and look at this, it turns out that it wasn't just about the fact that the vegan diet, a vegan twin might not have liked to do resistance training as much. We find out that on the vegan diet, they had a lower protein intake. And so this is a classic issue with vegan diets for people. It doesn't have to be the case. Of course, you can get enough protein on a vegan diet, and that's fine. But many times when they go vegan, they don't have as many options. And so their protein intake comes down, and this can really negatively affect somebody's lean mass component. So this is an example of they're just totally glossing over actually probably negative results from their study.
Got it. And then I think the third of your three was LDL cholesterol.
Yeah. And so this was actually the primary outcome that they wanted to look at, meaning this is what they were most interested in. And so LDL cholesterol, this is the bad cholesterol. This is what can lead to, you know, this clogging of arteries idea, the atherosclerosis that could lead to a blood clot, maybe a stroke. And they basically found that the vegan diet on average lowered LDL cholesterol by 13 milligrams per deciliter, which is actually a pretty good number. And it was statistically significant difference. So it was like, okay, this can lower it. This is an example, though, of where they don't really tell you the relevance in the docu-series, because it turns out all the twin sets were relatively healthy at baseline. And so when they're reporting the LDL results and they focus in on this one twin set and they're like, oh my gosh, your LDL on the vegan diet went down a lot and yours on the omnivore stayed the same. And so you're supposed to have this shock and awe of like, oh my gosh, you know, the omnivore diet is so bad. And then they're like, oh, but by the way, you on the omnivore diet, you were already in healthy ranges and it didn't change, but whatever, the vegan diet still went down. And so you're left with, okay, well, she was healthy to start. So does it matter that her LDL didn't go down? No. Does it mean that, you know, her sister who has now lower, still within the normal range, is any better? No. That's why we have kind of these cutoff points. And, you know, the paper even admits that. It says that, okay, these people were healthy at baseline. So even though that we saw a drop in LDL that was statistically significant, how clinically relevant that is unknown. So again, somehow the docuseries is like, this is so important. And the paper's like, might not matter. I do truly believe people eating more plants will help health markers like LDL. I do. Hello, 800 gram challenge. The difference is, does somebody need to be vegan?
So I'm going to go back to Yelena's question to sort of start to wrap this up, which is she had mentioned, still, if it helps people eat more fruits and vegetables, we all win in the end. And so I want to kind of ask you, like, do we all win in the end for things like You Are What You Eat and Game Changers? And there's another one that I'm blanking on, but these kinds of things, which to your point, don't always measure up if you know what you're looking for and you actually look for what you're looking for. So is this like a net positive or a net negative to you? Because it could very well get a lot of people to stop eating McDonald's and fill in the blank and eat more broccoli. Maybe that's obviously their hope, but like, so net positive if it does that, net negative because of all the confusion and all these kind of half truths, or where do you sort of land on that?
I think I go net positive for the creator's bank account. I think I go net neutral for any real nutritional value. One of the findings of this paper is that the vegan diet had lower dietary satisfaction.
Mm.
Well, guess what? I guess they haven't been a coach and worked with people in a long-term time horizon. Turns out dietary satisfaction matters. And so it's like, if we're thinking about what truly is a net positive for people, it's setting them up in a way to have an effective solution that works for them, for their goals, for their sustainability, without having to manipulate fear, without having to manipulate guilt, and what actually is true to science. And guess what? We can do that. And so, you know, this, whether or not it helps people end up eating more fruits and vegetables, I don't know. Maybe because I'm doing it, I find that there's another way. Like, I don't have to go on social media and be like, oh my God, like, we're all dying of TMAO. Like, don't, ignore the science, you know? So I have a hard time getting behind it. And I guess there could be some individuals where it ends up helping them change to a more positive way. But I'm just not convinced that it does. And I'm also not convinced that we have to do it in such an extreme way. And I just want to also add this from the paper itself. The paper itself says that excluding all meats and or dairy products may not be necessary because research suggests that cardiovascular benefits can be achieved with modest reductions in animal foods and increases in healthy plant-based foods compared with typical diets. They're basically saying, maybe we don't need to be vegan. Maybe we just need to increase the fruits and veggies. And it's like, okay, well, where was that docuseries? Where was that four-part docuseries, you know?
Love it. All right. Thank you, EC. One more reminder, if you want to get on the email list so you can get a weekly email from EC, get on it at optimizemenutrition.com/email. It'll take you 2 seconds. The link is in the show notes. EC and I will be back next week for a new episode of the Consistency Project Podcast.